a long time ago, and honestly, longer ago than I'd like to admit, when I was a young man living in Boston, I liked to explore not just the city, but the area around it. One day, a friend and I decided that we were going to go and visit Salem. Now, Salem, as you know, is chock-a-block full of history. It had the witch trials, Nathaniel Hawthorne. It had a lot of great architecture. It had a shipping industry. It was a neat place to go to. We could have taken the train up to Salem, but we drove. And we had a good day. I remember going to the Peabody Essex Museum. I remember we had lunch. We looked at some of the houses. It was a full day. And then we returned to the city. Now, it was when we were close to my home on Beacon Hill that I realized I did not have my wallet. Now, I don't know about you, but there are few things I dread more than losing my wallet. You have to get in touch with the Registry of Motor Vehicles to get a new license. You have to be in touch with the credit card companies to cancel out your plates. Any cash you have, it's gone. So my friend Stan asked if I wanted to go back to Salem to look for my wallet. And my first thought was, sure, that makes sense. And then my second thought was, why bother? We've covered a lot of ground, and who knew where my wallet might be? I thought, though, I should call the police and at least report that it was missing. And when I got back to my apartment, and this was long before everybody had cell phones, I went up to my phone and planned to make the call. But wouldn't you know it, the light was flashing. I had a message. And you can all guess who had called. The Salem police. Somebody had turned in my wallet, and I was welcome to come get it at my convenience. Well, that's great. And Stan and I got back in his car, and we drove up to Salem, and I went to the police department, and once they were convinced I was who I claimed to be, they turned over my billfold. And I'm pleased to report that it had my license and all of my cards and all of the cash. But it also had a note. And I wish I could show it to you today, but frankly, it's packed away somewhere and I couldn't find it. It was on a business card, an official business card, from a judge in Hialeah, Florida. And on it he wrote, "I wanted you to know there's one honest judge in Florida." Now, as I said, this was long ago. This was before the year 2000. But you remember the show Miami Vice? Have you ever read a mystery by Carl Hiaasen or Tim Dorsey? No offense to people from Florida, but it has a reputation for being this strange and wild and woolly place where things that are a little bit off happen. I don't know if that's a fair characterization, but the reputation exists, and that judge wanted to fight it. Now, I immediately thought of that judge when I read the parable in today's lesson. The judge in today's parable would not have turned in my wallet. He wouldn't have cared what I thought about him or his colleagues. And as we heard, he didn't care what anybody thought, whether on heaven or earth. He did his own thing. He went his own way. But into his courtroom one day wandered this widow. Now you can see that these are stock figures that Luke is using in this story. The widow was supposed to be emblematic of the person who was helpless, the person who had to depend on the mercy of others. the person who had no rights. And the judge had all of the power. And the judges back then didn't have to deal with juries. They didn't have to worry about an appeals court. Their word was the law. But interestingly enough, we hear that this woman, Hector, and cajoled and pestered and made a nuisance of herself. To borrow a phrase, she persisted. She wasn't going to give up. Now, we don't know if suddenly the judge was worried about his reputation, or perhaps he was worried about having a confrontation with the woman. But he decided he had enough of her. And the easiest thing to do was to give her justice. So he ruled in her favor. Now, when we hear parables, we often try to figure out who the characters are supposed to be. And when we hear these stories, we often think, the authority figure. That's supposed to be God. But we know Luke, who's recounting this story from Jesus, is not telling us that God is some kind of corrupt judge. He's telling us something else. That if this rotten judge, if this scoundrel could be moved to do the right thing, to listen to this widow, imagine how much more responsive the Lord is. And as Luke tells us right at the beginning of this passage, this story is about prayer and our persistence in bringing prayer. And we hear at the end about how God hears our offerings to him. And he's going to come. But what's he going to find? Prayer is a difficult thing. We often wonder how we're supposed to do it and how often we're supposed to do it. And do we have to sit or do we stand? And some traditions have us pray at certain times of the day, saying certain words. And other times we see that we're just supposed to say what's on our mind. Prayer can be difficult. Prayer takes effort. Prayer is a discipline. It's just like exercise. It's just like healthy eating. It's something we need to do repeatedly. But we will see the benefits. Now, we can pray for the wrong things. We can, if we're kids, pray for a pony to show up. Doesn't work that way. God isn't some kind of cosmic sugar daddy who's going to give us what we want. And think about it. Would you want to worship a God who could actually be manipulated that way? That kind of God says that we are ultimately in charge, and we're not. By the same token, I would suggest that we still need to bring everything to God. The small things and the big things. I remember one of my professors at divinity school said that if he were in a plane that was hurtling into the sea, he wouldn't pray to God to save him. He thought that was presumptuous. Really? Now, I know that prayer usually doesn't stop the plane from crashing into the sea. But think about those miraculous times when people survive a crash. Think about the time when that plane crash landed in the Hudson River. Remember Captain Sully? I may not expect God to break the laws of physics, but maybe the pilot is going to figure out what to do at the last minute. And I'd like to think the God I worship is capable of doing miraculous things. Timothy Egan, a columnist for the New York Times, has just come out with a book called A Pilgrimage to Eternity, From Canterbury to Rome in Search of Faith. And Mr. Egan grew up in a Catholic family. He's got a bunch of siblings, and they're all over the map in terms of their faith. But one of the questions that he had was, what is going on in Europe, which has been the cradle of the Christian faith? And yet we see religious observance there, and in the West in general, has been falling off in recent decades. At the same time, it's growing in other parts of the world. So Mr. Egan decided to take a walk from Canterbury in England to Rome in Italy, a pilgrimage. And pilgrimages seem to be popular these days. You've probably heard about the Camino de Santiago, which people travel. But this road spoke to him. It's an ancient road. It's been traveled for more than 1,000 years by pilgrims. And when he began his journey, Mr. Egan, like a lot of agnostics, had everything set out, everything was nice and orderly in his beliefs. But as he traveled the way, as he met people, as he had experiences, he began to appreciate what Pope Francis said about letting ourselves be amazed. And he found himself in a different place at the end of his trip. Now we can romanticize pilgrimages, but it's hard work to go on a pilgrimage. To climb mountain passes, to walk on small roads, to not know who your companions are going to be, to have no control over the weather. It's like prayer. It takes commitment. It takes work. It takes effort. But the payoff is there. So I invite everybody here to pray. And whether you're going to be singing the doxology or saying the Lord's Prayer later in worship or before you go to bed, or if you're just going to give voice or thought to the feelings that you've got, pray. You're not necessarily going to get the thing you want, but you will get the thing you need. The pony may not show up in the yard, but with regular prayer, you'll become more attuned to what you need. You'll become more attuned to the presence of God in your life. So I can promise you, there is an honest judge in Florida. And more importantly, there is a God in heaven, and he's listening. So talk to him.